If you're someone who's been told you weren't good enough, not big enough, not fast enough, not smart enough, or if you've ever felt paralyzed by a failure you just weren't willing to accept, this is the show for you. Hustle and Motivate is a blueprint built by guests who've overcome obstacles, silenced critics, and overcome adversity by seeing every failure as an opportunity, realizing the true power of the underdog mentality. This is Tyler O'Shea, and you're listening to Hustle and Motivate. Today's guest has a story that reads like a movie. In fact, it will be a movie pretty soon. Her book, A Journey of Hope to Heaven and Back, has been adapted into a Hollywood screenplay. I can't even begin to imagine going through the things that Jeannie has. 28 years of major surgeries, 4 open hearts, cancer twice, gangrene in both her legs, a head-on collision with an 18-wheeler, and 2 visits to heaven. By the end of it, she came out with $290,000 in medical bills, and a new lease on life. Despite all she's been through, Jeannie has kept a positive, upbeat attitude and is striving to help others view life in a different light. Here is Jeannie Enstead. So can you take me through your early days growing up? I understand you've always been a bit of a workaholic.
Yeah, I was, you know, it was 5 of us kids. I was the 3rd of 3 girls, so I was the tomboy. And so, you know, my parents always thought they would have a boy by the 3rd one. Well, guess what? It wasn't a boy, but it was me. So I ended up being the tomboy. But I say, too, that God knew what he was doing because he knew I was going to be having to go through trials as I got older. You know, when we worked on the farm, you know, I did like a guy's job. You know, I was lifting heavy bales. I was out in the fields, you know, 12 hours a day. You know, I got 4 o'clock when my grandparents were still alive and milk cows with my grandpa. And so I were German people, and Germans are typically workaholics. And I picked up that tradition. My brothers and sisters didn't, but I did. So, but in the long run, it's really done me well because I've had to stand up to a lot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And I could tell in your voice, you're just so upbeat and energetic. Have you always been that way?
Yeah, I have. You know, I've slowed down a little bit after all these surgeries, but yeah, I always have. You know, I mean, I went through some trials, you know, growing up and things like that with my parents and things like that. And, you know, I knew that, you know, I would go out on the farm and I would just go up like in a hayloft. Every time I get frustrated, I go up in the hayloft and I always watch the sun come up. I hang my legs out the window, watch the sun come up and, you know, look out to the fields. And I would always talk to someone, and I'm like, I don't know who I'm talking to, but they're listening to me. At least it's a way for me to talk. Realized that I was talking to God at the time. You know, I mean, we went to church. We were, you know, great Christian people that always went to church. We never was allowed to laugh in church or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And my grandparents were strict Germans where you didn't hug or anything. And I was the extreme opposite. I was the odd one out of 5. But yeah, always energetic, you know, things like that. You know, but it served me well, like I say, by going through what I went through.
Mm-hmm. So let's get to that. You've always been a runner, and you were training for the Boston Marathon, you know, running every single day, and then you find out you're having heart problems. Can you take me through that time?
Yeah, I was 34 years old and trying to qualify for the Boston Marathon. And I was running, I was up to 8 minute miles and 10 miles a night. Wow. And one night, all of a sudden, I had pain going down my left arm. I'm like, what is that? So I actually went to my neurologist and I said, I think there's something wrong, you know, with my neurological problem. He goes, no, I don't think that's it. He said, I think it's your heart. And I was like, it can't be my heart. I was like, why would I run that many miles? And he goes, Jeannie, he said, I'm going to send you to cardiologist and we just need to find out. So I remember going, you know, I went to cardiologist. He said, we're going to do a heart cath. I can remember, you know, I did the heart cath and he said, your mitral valve is bad. And I said, that can't be. I thought they had the wrong patient. I was so sure they had the wrong patient. Mm. So when they told me, I actually walked out of his office, ran a stoplight and stop sign. I went home and got in my closet and I felt like I wanted to get away from myself. You know, I thought, you know, how, what do? You hide from your problems. And I'm thinking, okay, I need to hide from my problem. Well, you can't hide from your heart since it's inside your body.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh my gosh. And reality hit me. And still, even when I went in a week later for the open heart surgery, I still was so sure they had made a mistake. So I took my briefcase and I had was still working on my things when I was in pre-op. And then they came in to get me. So I stuck it under, like underneath my covers because I knew they made a mistake. And I remember getting in the operating room and I remember the doctor going, who brings their briefcase to the operating room? No one does that. And then he looked at me and he said, you are a workaholic. I was like, well, you have the wrong patient. I can just leave. He goes, no, Jamie, we have the right patient. And I was like shocked. I couldn't get it through my head that I was supposed to run the Boston Marathon because I was close to qualifying. And I was like, I was supposed to run that. And now here I am having surgery. And they went in, they repaired my mitral valve. 4 hours later, I had a massive stroke. The valve just stopped. My heart just stopped. And I had a massive stroke and my right lung collapsed. And so that was the first time I went to heaven. And so here I am, you know, ready to run the marathon and end up, you know, a week later, I had a stroke. And, you know, all this happened to me. And it's like, boy, I was put down really quick. And mentally, that was hard, you know, but I also felt like, okay, what do I do in any other case? Pick up the pieces and move forward. Because, you know, I was at war with myself, but you can only be at war with yourself for so long, right? You just hurt yourself. So it's like, I couldn't even do anything else, you know?
So what was heaven like the first time?
Oh my gosh, heaven was amazing. I love talking about heaven. It was like, you know, when I looked down, you know, when I was watching them operate on me, and I remember I had not seen the surgeon. They brought a new surgeon in. And I remember looking down, and I kept trying to tell them, stop worrying about me. And he was like, oh my gosh, I don't know how we're going to save her. She's very young. And there was this tent over my head when they were operating. He went over and he grabbed that and pulled that tent off and said, oh my God, she's so young. She cannot die. And I kept saying, I'm fine. I'm fine. Stop worrying about me. What is wrong with you? And then all of a sudden, it's like I stopped. And I remember looking down and it was like I could see this white gown. And as soon as I like looked forward, I seen these golden gates and these golden streets. And I felt like a princess. I was just walking toward the gates. And then as I got past the gates, I no longer had a white gown, nothing. And I heard this angel say, you are home, my child. And so from there, I saw beautiful mansions. I mean, green grass, rivers, I mean, benches. Oh, my gosh. Exactly how it talks about heaven in Revelations is exactly what I seen. Mm. And it was like, you know, you hear people say, wouldn't it be great to live in a world where everybody loves each other? Well, that's what heaven is like. Everybody loves each other. And we went to, you know, I heard this, like this, I don't know, celebration. And I asked the angel, what is that? She goes, oh, someone has just come home. And she said, we have a greeting group out there. And she said, they greet the people when they come in. And if they have a family member here, they take them to their family members. I was like, oh. And I remember the other thing that amazed me is I couldn't believe how it's like the grass is cut all the time. It's always the same. And the other thing that amazed me, I saw someone like take a peach off a tree. And as soon as that peach was like pulled down, there was another peach the same size in its place. I was like, that's like magic. Yeah. She said, no, it's heaven. I'm like, oh my gosh. And it was like, you know, I heard voices and I didn't see bodies and because I was coming back. And I didn't know that. You know, I thought I was there for permanent. You know, but I like, and I did see, they talk about the library. We went into this library and I saw tons and tons of books, but it was hard. It's hard to explain it because this is tall, beautiful, gorgeous library. And it just looked like what you see in these mansions. Like I was like, oh my gosh. And I was only in there. Every time I would go somewhere, I was like pulled out really quick. It's like, okay, you can only see so much. You have to come back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh. So it was like, you know, the other thing is my grandparents had passed away. And I went into this garden. and I heard my grandpa. I said to my angel, "That's my grandpa." And she said, "Yes." And I said, "I want to go see him." She pulled me back. She said, "Not now." I said, "I don't understand. He's laughing. My grandpa doesn't laugh." She said, "He's in heaven. That's why he laughs." I was like, "Oh, okay." So it was like, so then, you know, when I came back, and I remember seeing, hearing Jesus, you know, he was beside me as we left the end of my trip there. And I remember him said, "I want to stay." And he said, "You have to go back." I said, "I don't want to go back. Please don't make me go back." And he said, "You have to go back." So I remember all of a sudden I saw his eyes, and he hugged me before I left. And when I came back then, I was, all of a sudden I looked up, opened my eyes up, and everything was black ahead of me. And I'm looking around, and I saw TV in front of me, and it was Toledo 11 News, and there was a boy that had been murdered in Toledo. And all of a sudden, it was like I start taking my life support system off me. I started pulling all the everything off, and I was like, "I don't want to be here." So the nurse came in, and she said, "Doctor, your doctor's search is coming in. Dr. Zama's going to come in and talk to you." So he came and talked to me, sat beside the bed, and he said, "Jeannie," and he said, "I came to sit with you when you were in heaven." And he said, "Every time I touched your hand, I knew that's where you were." And he said, "When I'd lose patients in surgery," he said, "I always came back and touched your hand because I knew that these people were in heaven with you, where you were." And it was just, so I mean, to hear, come in, to hear them talk about that was amazing.
Yeah. And then when you got back here, how did that change, that whole experience change your outlook?
Well, you know, when I came back, you know, I the nurse came in, and it took me 2 days. You know, I mean, I told the nurse I didn't want to see my family. I didn't want to see anybody. Everything was black and dark. And it took me 2 days to accept the idea that, okay, I'm back. And then they said, "We're going to take you down, physical therapy and, you know, workout and that sort of thing." I went down. I was the youngest person there. And here, people getting out of their wheelchairs and, you know, doing these, you know, heart exercises. I went to get on my wheelchair, and it was like all of a sudden I realized I couldn't move. And I remember coming back, I looked, I remember just slouching back in a chair. I looked at her and I said, "I've had a stroke." She said, "Yes, you have." And they took me back in the room, and a neurologist came in, and I say in my book, I don't know if I was mad because he was wearing a running suit or he told me I'd never walk again in my life. I don't know which was worse, you know? And that determination, that when I saw him in a running suit, that just did something to my mind that was like, you know what? And he said to me, he said, "Jeannie, I am so sorry, but you'll never walk again in your life." And I remember looking at him thinking, "You are so wrong. I am going to walk. And if the last thing I have to prove to you is I can walk again." And so that determination, it was a struggle. You know, and I had to learn to talk again, learn to use my arm again, and, you know, all that. So, and it was a struggle coming back, and it was hard work. But you have to have that will. You know, if you put your mind to something, I mean, I think people would be shocked to know what their mind can actually do. When you put your mind to something, you can do anything you have to do. Mm-hmm. And that was that determination that got me back, Tyler, because I wouldn't have been able to do that if not.
And that's my favorite part of your book so far as I got into the book, of when you go back and you show that doctor that you can walk now.
Yeah. Yes. It was funny because you're right. Because I remember I was saying to the kids, okay, I go back to the cardiologist and still be in a wheelchair, and I couldn't wait. You know, I went back to, and I'd see the neurologist as I seen a cardiologist, he was still in a wheelchair, and he looked at me and he said, he'd always say, "Well, you're getting better, but you'll never walk." And I kept looking at him, and in the back of my mind, I was like, "You are dead wrong." I was so mad. I was like, "I am going to." And so I remember, of course, the last time then, I remember taking my, you know, them pushing me in the wheelchair, and I got in his office, and I remember that. And he looked at me and he said, "Jeannie, you need to give it up. You know, it's been so many months now, you're not going to walk." And I remember, you know, of course you read that, getting out of my wheelchair. And I got walked over to his desk and I said, "I am walking." And I turned around, walked right back out, and I said, "Oh, by the way, you need the wheelchair. I don't need it anymore." I remember look on his face. It was like, what?
That's amazing.
Yes, I was so excited. I was like, you know, and then I went back for another open heart surgery. That valve failed within 6 months. And I had to have another open heart. And then I had, right after that, then I had ovarian cancer. And went into my third open heart surgery. And so it was just like every year, there was two or three surgeries every single year. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, when's this going to quit? How much can one body, your body can go through a lot more than people realize. But it takes faith.
How did you get through those times? Like you just said, it takes faith. How did you make it through, you know, the third open heart, the ovarian cancer, all the other stuff that came next?
I just, you know, it's like, I felt like I have to literally, I don't know, you know, how it's like, I really had to just talk myself. You know, I actually picked up my Bible and I was angry. I was angry at God. And I was like, you know, I don't understand, you know, why do I have all this? You know, I just recuperated from open heart twice through a stroke. Why? And I remember getting mad. I remember this voice saying, are you done? I'm like, yeah, I guess I'm done. Okay. Then let's talk about reality. And I was like, okay. But it was the idea that I think that I am a workaholic and I had that determination, but that isn't what really did it. It was having faith, you know, because I made this deal with God. I was like, okay, you know what? You tell me that I need to keep going. You need to be here to help me. And I remember him saying to me, I'm here. I'm in. I'll help you. But this is a two-way street here. I'm like, okay. But I had to constantly go back and read the Bible over and over many times because I kept relying on his promises. There were, and the other thing I relied on is that no matter what we go through, and this is something I always will live on, is that got to remember, no matter how bad it is, that God wants the best for us. He created us for a purpose and a reason. And there's always a reason in every trial. We may not know what it is, but I always say now when something happens, I'm like, you know what? I don't know why this happened, but I know you do, and that's good enough for me. And so it's just a constant, Tyler is just constantly having that faith that keep going, because without it, I wouldn't be here.
So I'm not at this part of the book yet, but can you tell me about your second visit to heaven?
My second visit is, in the meantime, I had, I had four open heart surgeries before that happened. I had breast cancer also then. And then I had a brain tumor. And I had just recovered from the brain tumor because I went into another stroke again. Just recovered from that on a Friday. And the office was having a big party for me. You know, it was like, this is cool. I'm out. I'm going to the gym tomorrow. Work on my own, you know. And the next day, St. Patrick's Day, I had asked my daughter. She was a senior. I said, do you want to go with me to work out? She goes, no, I think I'll stay home. But I'll see you when we get back. I said, okay. So I was like excited. Here I am driving now. I hadn't driven for almost a year, you know. And I was so excited, you know. So I got in my car, and it was, we had black ice. And next thing I know is that I'm a couple miles from my house, and all of a sudden I'm slipping on this ice. And I'm trying to gear my car into the ditch. And next thing I know, a semi is coming toward me. And he hit me head on. And he ended up in my back seat. So I end up being in a body cast. And I remember them taking the jaws of life and trying to cut me out of the car. And, you know, my brother was on the sheriff's department, was the first to respond. And anyway, they, you know, I remember being life flighted after I got to the hospital, and that was it. I again saw, I looked down and could see what looked like my dead body. And so when I went to heaven the second time, I was getting glimpses of watching my family come and go. But then when I went to heaven, I seen exactly the same thing as I seen before. But this time I seen my grandma. My grandma was a great cook. I heard her in the kitchen. And I was like, that's my grandma. And again, I wasn't allowed to see her. And I said, she's laughing. My grandma doesn't laugh. Angel said, she's in heaven. That's why. I was like, oh, okay. And I could hear kids running around in circles like they were playing and things like that. And then I saw what looked like at a distance is this huge light. And I would see, and it looked like people like on their knees, but it was just light, all I could see, and they were worshiping. So I asked the angel, what are they doing? And she said, oh, they're worshiping. She said, we don't have church here. Church is everywhere, all day, everywhere. I was like, oh, then you have days. She said, no, we don't have days. I was like, I'm confused. She said, you'll understand. And I said, but am I going back? Is that why you're not telling me everything? And she said, you're going back. I was like, I don't want to go back. Please don't make me go back to that again. And I didn't want to come back. I was really having to struggle with that. And so I saw more, just like rivers after rivers, beautiful colors, flowers, streets are as golden as you can imagine. People would come and go. They'd stop. I'd hear people stopping and talk to my angel. And yet, they were all like just happy. And it was like, then they'd move on and do their own thing. And I would, angel would take me to place to place. And I'd see pretty much the same thing. But the difference was that I kept begging. Jesus came up to me and said, it's time to go home. And I said, I don't want to go home. Please, I don't want to. And I remember like trying to hang on him. Please don't make me go. And he said, you have to go. So then all of a sudden, he said, I tell you what, you can stay if you choose to. I said, okay, I want to stay. And he goes, but before you make a decision, you have to see something. And I said, okay. And I looked down and saw my body laying on the bed in the hospital and looked like, of course, a dead body. And there was my daughter sitting on the left side of me, praying and crying and asking Jesus to bring me back. And my son was on the other side, doing the same thing. And then my middle son was just standing there staring. And they were all three of them saying, Jesus, please, Mom, don't let Mom die. And I remember saying to Jesus, what about them? He goes, I don't know. What about them? So who's going to take care of them? I'm all they have. He goes, I know. I said, well, I have to go back for them. He goes, okay, but that's your choice. And I was like, I have to go back and raise them. And so I came back. But you know what's really interesting is a few years ago, the kids are into college and got their own lives, things like a few years ago, I told God, okay, I'm ready to come back now. And I remember him saying, I'm doing a Bible study one night. I'm like, when are you going to take me back? And he goes, I didn't say that. I said, yes, you did. I said, the deal was that after the kids were raised, that I could come back. He said, no. Think about what was said. That is not what I said to you. And you're the one that did the talking. I didn't do all the talking. So I was thinking, okay, wait a minute. Let me think now. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, I did do the talking. I said, so I'm not coming back now? And he goes, no. I was like, crap. I said, why can't I just come back now? He goes, you have too much here to do. And I said, I don't want to do that. He's like, you have no choice. I was like, darn it, I want to come back. And I thought, and it was like, I remember going to bed that night thinking, man, I got to really think about this. He did not say that. I did. So it's got a lot of humor and stuff in it. But, I told the kids when I'm gone, I said, celebrate. And you know what? When we lose our loved ones, we really need to celebrate. It's so hard for us because I just lost my mom like 4 years ago. And it's hard. Because I miss her, and I had a hard time with it, but yet I know where she's at, and she's happier there than she'll ever be here. So, I mean, and it's hard, So, I understand that, that part of it, it enables me to help, everything I've been through enables me to help people that have been through, heart, cancer, strokes, or death, and that sort of thing. So, I would say God has a purpose and a reason for everything that we go through. And, we just have to always know that He's in control and we're not. And we can't, we can't control things. But, when we really are doing the job that God created us to do, we never work a day in our life because we enjoy life so much. Mm-hmm. And I love it. Everything I do, and I always love my jobs, but it's like now it's like, oh my gosh, I'm doing so many exciting things. I get up every morning. I'm like, okay, God, I'm in. What are we doing today? So I get really excited about, but I also had a doctor before I had the, right after I had the accident, I also had a doctor that got the wrong patient, damaged my spinal cord. So the outer part of my arm is paralyzed. An inner part of my arm burns on fire. So, and I have fibromyalgia. So I have, I mean, I literally have to depend on God every day because I wake up and I'm in so much pain. And I, you know, I just always say, you know, I can't do it without you. And I literally can't do it without him. And, you know, people will, you know, I'll go out and start speaking to different groups and they all look at me and go, are you kidding? I'm like, yeah, I know. I have the same reaction sometimes. Like, you know, I'm in so much pain and then I'll get in the shower and I just, you know, I always pray before I even get out of bed. And that's where I think, do my Bible study, kind of do my routine with my Bible study, and then I'm good to go. And that's how I get through every day. You know, people will ask me all the time, how do you get through that? I said, oh my gosh, you know, it's, I literally have to depend on him, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been a challenging life and every day seems to be challenging. I now have what they call, we just found out I have carcinoid disease, and that's, a carcinoid is tumors. I've got cancer tumors on my heart.
Oh my gosh.
And they say it's very, a rare disease. And, you know, it was one of those things, you know, last week, this is not my book, but last week when we found out, you know, I learned about it. And, you know, my doctor says it's, you know, it's usually a slow growing. And so, you know, at first, you know, I always say I have to get my crying through. So once I get my crying out done, you know, I just go home and I say, okay, what's the deal here? You know, what is going on? And I just look at it as that, you know, we don't know the day we're going to die, but God does. And I'm just going to live to the fullest till that day comes. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to let, you know, I always, and that's another thing. I focus, when things like this happen to me, I focus on positive things. Mm-hmm. And I don't, I put, it's like I, there's sometimes, Tyler, this is, I know it sounds kind of crazy, but there are times where somebody will say, oh, I'm so sorry to hear you have this or that, or you had that. And I was like, I did? Because, you know, and I don't say that to them, but, you know, because I have worked so hard putting it out of my mind, you know, when we dwell on our problems, they always get bigger. And it's going to seem bigger, you know, and if we can find something positive in our life and concentrate on that, our problems just don't seem that big. Mm-hmm. You know, and know that I automatically, you know, like I say, I just said, God, you know what? It's in your hands. It's not my hands. And, you know, I always, you know, I still say, Tyler, I focus on God wants the best for us. He created each of us. And when we are doing what he created us for, life is exciting. It's when, and I talk about this in my book, there are many stories of me because of being a workaholic. I'm a stubborn person. You know, I kept always telling God, I don't need your help. I can do this myself. You know, in fact, I'm so stubborn that when I had one of my open heart surgeries, I come home from surgery. My Bible study comes over and said, we'll mow your lawn. I had 3 acres of lawn to mow. And they said, we'll mow your lawn for you. And I said, no, I don't need help. So what do? I go out the next day, try to mow my lawn, and I'm ambulanced back to the hospital. Now, how crazy is that? And finally, I was like, you know what? I need to get it. You know, I'm just being my worst enemy. So, you know, I talk about totally, you know, relying completely on him. You know, he knows everything. We don't. You know, we think we do, and we try, but in the long run, we don't.
So for people listening that don't know, your book is called A Journey of Hope to Heaven and Back. And it's gotten amazing reviews from everyone who's read it. I'm really enjoying it so far. I can't wait to finish it. What are some other things you want readers to take away from your book?
I want people to know that no matter what you go through, we all have hope. And we have hope of a beautiful eternal home. And God has a beautiful home for each one of us. And, you know, whenever you go through trials, believe in something positive. You know, refocus your mind on something that's positive. Don't dwell on the negative, you know, because that's just, it's easy to do. And the devil will put this in our minds. Fighting off the devil is one of the hardest things I think we all deal with. Mm-hmm. And he's always going to tell us, you know, that, you know, this is not right, that's not right. But I followed, you know, I mean, I talk about my book that, you know, I almost committed suicide once because I had so much pain. For 3 days, I was screaming in pain, and I almost went downstairs and cut my wrist. The only thing that kept me going was I had the Bible with me. I carried it with me because I was afraid of myself. And I think that we all go through struggles. Everybody has problems in this world. None of us are exempt. And I think that, you know, if we can remember that we have a Creator that does love us and that He will take care of us. So, you know, I guess that's what, you know, my message is that every one of us has hope. Mm-hmm. And we all have an eternal home in heaven. Mm-hmm. You know, and I totally relied on the Bible a lot. You know, I just went in when I would get very upset, frustrated about things, I pick up my Bible right away and start reading and reading and reading. And all of a sudden I felt I could talk to God. And I felt like He was talking to me and He was giving me that assurance. He would always say, you know, I'm here for you. I want what's best for you. Mm-hmm. You know, don't worry. And, you know, and I caught my human mode. When I be in my human mode, I'm always like, you know, worried about this or that. And I remember one day God said, you know, you want to get out of your human mode and get in your God mode? And I'm like, my what? I was like, okay, got it. So I have to try to stay out of my human mode because I'm like, I don't like myself when I'm in human mode.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, those are, you know, but those are the things I hope people will really find. And that, you know, through my story, I was stubborn and I tried to do things myself on my own and, you know, without any help from God. And I learned the tough way. You know, I went through many, many trials. A lot of them was my fault. A lot of them wasn't. But, you know, there are some issues there that, you know, I could have done something different. But I didn't, you know, only because I'm stubborn.
And I saw in one of your interviews where you talked about a man you helped at the grocery store. Would you mind telling that story real quick?
Yeah, I was at Walmart one day and there was a gentleman in front of me. He was just very angry and it was really kind of nasty with the cashier. And I thought, okay, because, you know, I get this on my heart all the time. I need to help people. I'll walk up to complete strangers. You know, I tell them I have a beautiful smile. I just do that. And so I kept thinking, okay, what can I do to help him? I thought, oh, I know. I'll take his things out of his cart and put them on the counter. Well, as I went to take him out of his cart, because my right arm is paralyzed, I kept dropping everything back in. And every time I do it, it was dropped back in. Finally, he looked over and he goes, lady, what is your problem? I think you're trying to help me. But he goes, what is your problem? What happened to you? And I said, I am so sorry. I said, you know, I am trying to help you, but I said, my arm's just not strong enough. He says, what happened? I said, a doctor got the wrong patient, damaged my spinal cord. And he's like, oh my gosh, I'd be ticked off. I said, I was, but I said, you know, it only goes for so long. You know, you're at war with yourself. Mm-hmm. So we got talking about different things and we talked about things that I was going through. And that's the thing. He got his things. I got my things. I went out to my car. I was back in my car out and he was like, standing there with flowers. So I pull my car in, park my car again, and I get out and I said, what's this? And he said, these flowers are for you. I said, oh, because I dropped everything in your cart? And he goes, no, actually, you saved my life today. And I said, oh, because I screwed up everything? And he's like, no. He said, I have to tell you this. And he said, I'm not pleased to tell you about this. And I said, okay. And he said, I actually came to the grocery store to buy groceries to make supper for my wife. And these flowers are for her. And he said, when she went to bed, I was going to go out in the building and hang myself. I looked at him. I said, what? You're going to do what? He goes, I know. You're probably ready to hang me right now. And I said, yeah, I am. He goes, you know what? I said, what happened? He said, I lost my job. I said, wait a minute. You're going to commit suicide because you lost your job? He said, yeah. I said, listen, do you ever think that when one door closes, God's got a better door for you? He said, no, but I do now. And he said, I am so sorry for what I was thinking. He said, I couldn't imagine going through what you've gone through. And he said, you know what? You inspired me to change my life. So I actually started working with him and his wife, and he ended up having a great career after that. He did go to a better job. So, you know, I tell people that, you know, we never know. You know, people are nasty at places and things like that. We never know what they're going through. And because we don't, you know, even road rage, be nice to people. I love doing acts of kindness. I have a program that's called the Love Walk. And I love just doing things to people and coming up to strangers and just doing things, you know, buying their gas or buying them lunch or things like that. I love doing that. And I thought about, you know, if I hadn't done that, what would that have happened to that family? So we never know, you know, what someone else is going through. So I, you know, whenever God puts in my heart to do something, I do it. I'm always like, I'm in. You know, I've learned a tough way of not obeying. And I am so glad that day that I did what he told me, because I don't know what would happen. So, yeah.
And I think you're just your story and everything about you, the way you speak, I think you can really help everyone from all walks of life. And so where can people find your book? And is there anything you want to share about the next book that you're working on?
You can get my book on Amazon and Barnes & Nobles. I also have a website that they can go on. And I really, I do a lot of coaching. I do a lot of work with people. And, you know, I'd be more happy to work one-on-one. I don't know if you, I mean, I can get my email address if anybody, whoever wants to talk to me. I'd be more happy to do that. But my next book should be out by the end of the year. And my next book is going to be called Tomorrow, God's Fulfilled Promises. What happened after the first book was published? Because God kept saying, I will heal you. Do I get healed? I mean, if you look, the last chapter is called Tomorrow, of my current book. And tomorrow I ask God, will I be healed here on earth? Will I ever find someone? Because I've been single all these years, all time. I've been alone since this happened. And I said, I ask him, will I meet anybody to do mission work? Everything I ask him, his answer is, I'll tell you tomorrow. So it stops there. And so now the new book is Tomorrow. What happens after the book's published, and what brings tomorrow? And there are a lot of things that have already happened that's really been exciting. So, yeah. So that's my book. And hopefully I'll have it. It'll be out by the end of the year.
Awesome. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. I'll make sure you get it. And and it's going into a movie right now, too. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see, like, if they make it a movie or if they make it a series, like you were saying earlier, it could be great either way. So,
yeah, want to know, right?
Yeah. Well, Jeannie, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show. You know, your story is absolutely incredible. And just speaking to you for the past, you know, 30, 45 minutes or whatever it's been, has been amazing. It's had such a big impact on me, and reading your book, all that stuff. Really appreciate you coming on the show. And I hope you have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. I really love talking to you. I appreciated doing it.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, or if you learned something new, smash that subscribe button and leave us a quick review. Hustle and Motivate is presented by JokerMag.com, the home of the underdog.